Hello, I'm Michael Serapio, and this is the Primetime Politics Podcast.
Tonight on Primetime Politics, defending the carbon tax.
Now, when it comes to the price on pollution, this is entirely revenue neutral. The government does not keep a penny.
Liberals go on the defensive as conservatives try to kill a carbon tax increase scheduled for April the 1st. Coming up, we'll hear from two MPs and find out why liberals think Canadians can deal with a hike in the carbon levy. Also,
together, we can beat Danielle Smith and the UCP.
Trading in his signature purple for partisan orange, Nahid Nenshi will talk about his decision to run for Alberta's NDP leadership. And
Brian Mulroney's principles helped shape this nation and the world for the better.
Paying tribute to Brian Mulroney, we'll hear what was shared in the House of Commons today. This is Primetime Politics. Hello, everyone. I'm Michael Serapio. The Trudeau Liberals found themselves on the defensive today, pushing back against opposition conservatives who want to kill a scheduled increase to the price on carbon. Conservatives argue it's an increase that will hurt Canadians who are struggling economically. But Liberals say the levy actually helps Canadians by giving them more in rebates than what they pay out. Take a listen to what happened in the House today.
This Prime Minister is promising a cruel April Fool's Day joke, a 23% carbon tax hike on food, gas, and groceries. This at a time when the Prime Minister has forced 50 families in at CFB in Gagetown, military families, to go to food banks. 2 million Canadians every month going to those same food banks, 8,000 as part of a Facebook group where they share tips on eating out of dumpsters. Will the Prime Minister gain some compassion and some common sense and spike the hike?
The Honourable Deputy Prime Minister, Minister of Finance.
Mr. Speaker, we will take no lessons from the Conservatives when it comes to supporting the least vulnerable in our country. This is the party that wants to cut the Canada Child benefit. This is the party that wants to cut support to our seniors. This is the party that wants to cut early learning and child care, which supports so many families. They're opposed to dental care. They're opposed to pharmacare, Mr. Speaker.
Well, to talk about the carbon tax slash rebate, we're now joined by Adam Van Cuverden. He is the Parliamentary Secretary to the Minister of Environment and Climate Change. Andrew Scheer is the Conservative House Leader. Hello to the two of you.
Hi there.
Hey, Michael.
Listen, Adam, I'll start with you. And with that, I want to begin here with a bit of what we heard from Premier Fury of Newfoundland and Labrador last week, because he had this to say about this hike in the carbon levy. He said, quote, "It is causing understandable worry as people consider how they will manage the mounting financial strain." You know this. Canadians are struggling financially right now. Is your government turning a blind eye to that struggle by not addressing this increase and stopping it before it happens?
Well, addressing the affordability crisis that Canadians are experiencing right now requires us to talk to experts and listen to economists and listen to Canadians as well. And that's what we've been doing. And from the beginning of our plan to fight climate change with the price on pollution, we've tried to reassure Canadians that the rebates are sending more cash back to 80% of families in Canada. And those tend to be the 80% of lower income families. The top 20% that pay a little bit more tend to be wealthy. And you know they tend to drive larger cars and heat bigger homes. But I understand why people are anxious right now. It's a really tough time financially. But in order to tackle that crisis and make sure that Canadians have enough money to pay the bills, we've got to look at the root cause, and that's inflation. And it's also important to listen to economists when they tell us, like point blank, that the price on pollution is not one of the main drivers of inflation. Inflation exists around the world in countries that price carbon and in those that don't, and it's actually lower in Canada than in a lot of countries that don't have a price on pollution or a carbon tax. So I want to reassure Canadians that they'll be receiving more back through the rebates in 2024 than they did in 2023, and it's a pillar of our program to lower our emissions in Canada and fight climate change, as so many other countries. We're one of about 50 50 countries in the world that are using carbon pricing to lower emissions, and it's working in Canada. Our emissions are down since 2005. We ran on a commitment to lower our emissions in Canada by 40 to 45% of 2005 levels, and we're on target. We're on the right path, whereas in 2015, Canada was on the wrong path. Our emissions were going up in Canada, and now the only sector in Canada that still has their emissions going up is the oil and gas sector. So look, we have more work to do. We have more work to do on fighting the affordability crisis and climate change in Canada, but it's important that governments have a plan to do both, and we do.
Andrew, how do you respond to that? Because as to hear it from Adam, again, the carbon levy is working and Canadians do get a rebate. So how do you respond to that?
There's just so much wrong in everything he said. I was actually astonished that he was able to cram so many falsehoods into one statement. First of all, the carbon tax is a major driver in inflation. The Bank of Canada governor testified at committee that the carbon tax was responsible for about 33%, about a third of all the extra inflation that is plaguing Canadians. It's significantly adding to the cost of literally everything. The parliamentary budget watchdog was at committee today, and he testified that when you factor in all the secondary effects of the carbon tax, that the vast majority of Canadians are worse off. You see, what the Liberals did was they designed the rebate only to address the direct cost. So when you fuel up your car or when you pay your heating bill, you'll see the carbon tax on that. But what you're not compensated for is when the producer, the shipper, the retailer, when they all have to raise their prices to cover their share of the carbon tax, the rebate doesn't cover any of that. And what the budget watchdog told MPs today is that average middle income earners are net losers under this Liberal government, that the rebate doesn't cover anywhere near the full cost of the carbon tax. So what the Liberals are asking Canadians to do is thank them for taking about $2,600 out of their pocket and only kicking back $2,000. I mean, would you invest in a mutual fund where you put in $2,600 and you get back $2,000? The average Albertan family is going to be worse off to the tune of about $900. The average Saskatchewan family will be about $600 worse off. Same thing in Ontario. So the vast majority of Canadians, especially those average income earners, are going to be worse off because the rebate is just a shell game that doesn't cover all the costs.
Adam, how do you respond to that?
Well, you know, I think Andrew and I have been on television together three times in the last week or so, and I think it's clear that we're probably not going to convince each other today that, you know, carbon pricing works or that carbon pricing doesn't. But one thing that I think we can both agree on is that you should follow through on your commitments when you knock on doors and ask Canadians for your vote. And in 2019 and in 2021, I knocked on doors and I told Canadians that I had a plan and we had a plan to fight climate change and to lower our emissions. Now, back in 2019, I remember knocking on doors because Andrew Scheer, who's running for Prime Minister at that time, said that Canada should be allowed to increase our emissions. And he said that since a couple of times. So since, in 2021, with Erin O'Toole, they had a price on pollution in their campaign platform. They've abandoned that since. But the last time that Canadians voted, if they voted Conservative, they voted for a plan to price carbon with a carbon tax. They had some kind of a green catalog where Canadians could choose how they could spend their credits, if you want to call it that. It was called the more you burn, the more you earn. Now, I'm not willing to trade on the future of this planet for short-term political gain. Perhaps Andrew Scheer and the Conservatives are willing to abandon any commitments that they either had in 2021 or didn't show in 2019 to fight climate change and lower our emissions. Now, Mr. Scheer has said in the past that he agrees with the Paris Agreement to lower our emissions, but then at the same time he said Canada should be allowed to increase our emissions so that we can offset other countries lowering those emissions. So look, Bill Nordhaus is an economist and a climatologist and an environmentalist who's got something that neither of us do, and that's a Nobel Prize in economics. And he recently said that Canada's getting it right on pricing pollution. And what the Conservatives aren't taking into consideration when they talk about all the externalities associated with pricing carbon, they're also not talking about the externalities associated with climate change. Climate change is costing Canadians over $2 billion a year, whether that's through unmitigated natural disasters, which are getting way worse, wildfires and floods. Climate change isn't free, and solving it's not going to be free either. So I want to hear from a Conservative, are we going back to 2019, where it's okay for Canada to increase our emissions? Or are you going to stick to your commitment of 2021 and have a plan to reduce our carbon emissions with some form of carbon pricing? Because Canadians are desperate to know. The Conservatives have still not told Canadians what their plan to fight climate change is, if anything.
Well, you know, Andrew, to that, what would conservatives do? Because right now you're campaigning against this planned increase, but your party writ large is campaigning against the carbon tax altogether. So how do you incentivize Canadians to find greener alternatives? Is that a priority for your party?
Well, of course, and what we have to do is we have to stop talking about the carbon tax as if it is an environment plan. And if Adam wants to talk about what he said when he was door knocking, I wonder if he could tell viewers what he said to voters that when he promised them in 2019 that the carbon tax would not go up under Justin Trudeau. He promised, it was a Liberal campaign promise, that they would not raise the carbon tax in 2019. And once Justin Trudeau was reelected and he didn't need the votes of Canadians, but he still needed their cash, he raised the carbon tax. So that was a direct broken promise after committing a solemn commitment not to hike the carbon tax. Here we are on the eve of another 23% hike to the carbon tax. Under this Liberal government, Canada has fallen further in climate change action. We're now ranked 62 out of 64 countries. The Environment Commissioner has said the Trudeau government is stacking failures on top of failures. Adam's own Environment Department tabled a response in the House of Commons that said that the government can't even attribute any reductions in greenhouse gases to the carbon tax. So it is a complete failure as it relates to addressing environmental challenges. And what we're going to get if Justin Trudeau is allowed to continue hiking this carbon tax, we're going to get the worst of both worlds. We're going to still get the negative effects of climate change because countries like China are building coal-fired power plants as investments move overseas to countries with lower environmental standards. The world is actually going to see more CO2 because Canada will offshore a lot of the production that we can do here much cleaner and much greener. So we're going to get worse results on the environment and higher prices. And what Adam said at the beginning of his segment is so telling. You know, this is the epitome of Liberal government. They're not listening to the millions of Canadians lining up at food banks. They're listening to the elites. They're listening to all the people who publish papers and fancy experts, discussion groups. Academics. But they're not listening to the moms and dads who are going through grocery aisles, staring at the price on a package of beef and putting it back because they can't afford it. They're ignoring the real life examples that we have, the misery that the carbon tax is causing. So that's why conservatives are going to keep putting the pressure on to spike the hike and axe the tax.
But what would you do in its place, though, in terms of addressing the environment?
Well, we can do a lot to reduce global emissions. When European allies came to Canada, begging Canada to sell our clean LNG so that Germany and France and Italy could get off of Russian oil exports, Justin Trudeau said no. You know, it baffles the mind that at a time when Ukraine is suffering from an illegal invasion, one way to weaken Putin's war machine is to displace Russian oil and gas with cleaner Canadian. Justin Trudeau said no. We want to say yes to clean projects. There was a proposal for a tidal energy program, a project that would have harnessed the powers of the wave to create zero emissions energy. Trudeau government said no to that. Under Justin Trudeau, Canada doesn't even mine lithium. You know, there's all this talk and all this attention on electric vehicles and Canada's ability to produce batteries for it. And under Justin Trudeau, lithium mines can't even get a green light or a permit. So under a Pierre Poilievre government, we're going to say yes to big projects that reduce emissions, that export more of what Canada can do at a much lower emissions rate than any other country in the world. And that way, we'll actually have a positive impact on climate change and bring down prices for struggling Canadians.
Okay, quickly running out of time. So my last question is to you, Adam. You know, given what we've just heard here, if the carbon tax, as you say, is so good for Canadians, then why is the conservative message getting traction right now, not only amongst Canadians when you look at polling numbers, but amongst premiers in this country as well?
It's because of inflation, Michael, and inflation is a real problem. And I just want to pick apart two things that Mr. Scheer just said. He said, first of all, that the carbon tax was responsible for way more of inflation than the governor of Bank of Canada said. The governor of Bank of Canada said it was responsible for less than 0.15%. And that's very, very low.
6% of the 3.8.
So if you'll allow me, I'll let you finish, Mr. Scheer. The other thing that Mr. Scheer just said is when you asked him about lowering Canadian emissions, he went right to global emissions because his plan is to increase Canada's emissions positions because he believes, as he did and campaigned in 2019, that Canada should be allowed to raise our emissions. Even though in Canada, per capita, we have the highest emissions in the world, that's just not okay. Look, I'm not going to apologize for being an environmentalist. And we do need to listen to experts as well as listening to Canadians at the grocery store. And we need to have a plan to tackle the affordability crisis. But axing the tax and spiking the hike, as these guys keep saying, will not achieve that goal. Because food economists, people who actually study this, say that grocery prices are high because of climate change, not because of carbon pricing. So we need to have a plan to attack both affordability and lower our emissions. As the Conservatives have continually said, they want our emissions to go up, which would make climate change worse, and food will get more expensive.
Okay, well, listen, I'm sorry we're out of time, but we'll leave it there for now. Adam Van Cuverdam, Andrew Scheer, thank you very much for the time this evening.
You bet.
Tributes for former Prime Minister Brian Mulroney were heard in the House of Commons today. Words of praise for this country's 18th Prime Minister, who died on February 29 at the age of 84.
Prime Minister Brian Mulroney served in this chamber for a decade, but he served Canada his entire life. He loved this country with his whole heart, and he knew we were capable of great things. He saw that the greatest strength of this country was our shared values: opportunity, fairness, and justice for all, was one of the ways he put it. But he also understood that success was not automatic. It took hard work.
I would call and seek his advice. In fact, I was very blessed to receive it. I asked him, for example, what is it that he did to deal with all the strain of the job, the anticipation of a close election, the worry about the fate of a political battle? His answer was not that he studied stoicism or mastered yoga or meditated on a hilltop, or even that he was a tough guy that had no worries in the world. No, he explained to me very simple that he surmounted worry through one word: Mila. Mila Mulroney.
After the tributes, Mulroney's sons, Ben, Mark, and Nicholas, thanked the leaders for their words and shared some thoughts while answering reporter questions in the foyer of the House of Commons.
We want to thank the Prime Minister and the Leader of the Opposition, as well as Mr. Plamondon, Mr. Singh, and I said a special thank you for Ms. May for their really very touching tributes and recollections that mean so much for the family. Thank you.
I would say that as we kind of think about it, my dad came here when he was a 17-year-old boy for Youth for DEEF, and he kind of was eager to get back here, and he did, and he enjoyed every minute of the back and forth parliamentary process, the debate, and seeing it today and seeing how it was. We obviously understand what drew him here, but what also he loved about it. And for us, sitting up in the gallery and hearing everybody speak so positively, probably not what he was used to, but he would have loved it, and we did as well. And everybody kind of taking the time to think through and to say these positive words, we can't be more thankful. So thank you very much.
Yeah, and just one last point. It's just been incredibly humbling to hear the outpouring of support from friends and former foes. Being the youngest member of the family, this is certainly not something I grew up used to. And it's especially for the grandkids, they get to see and experience something so special. We're truly honored from all of the people across the country and internationally that have taken the time to reach out to say nice things and words of support. So just want to thank everybody on behalf of the family. Thank you.
The family will begin receiving condolences for former Prime Minister Mulroney while his body lies in state. That begins tomorrow morning, Tuesday, in Ottawa, with members of the public able to pay their respects from 12:30 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern. Mr. Mulroney's body will lie in state until Wednesday afternoon. The former Prime Minister will then be transported to St. Patrick's Basilica in Montreal, and there his body will lie in repose until Saturday morning. Then, on Saturday, a funeral cortege will make its way from St. Patrick's to Notre Dame Basilica, where Mr. Mulroney's state funeral will take place. CPAC will have full coverage throughout this week and will broadcast the state funeral on our channel and online. Well, the Alberta Premier, Danielle Smith, is still leading public opinion polls in her province, but that is not stopping an old friend from university from taking aim. Former Calgary Mayor Nahid Nenshi now joining the race to lead the Alberta NDP to fight Danielle Smith and her government's policies.
What we need now is smart, credible government. We need a government that respects us. We need a government that we can trust. And sadly, we don't have it. Danielle Smith and her government are not only incompetent, they're immoral and they're dangerous.
Well, we're now joined by Nahid Nenshi. Mr. Nenshi, thank you for taking the time again.
Hello, it's so great to be here with you.
Well, you know, a very big news that you announced, and I do want to begin our conversation right now with this new polling data that came out this morning, again from Palace Data, and it says of all the leadership hopefuls hoping to replace Rachel Notley, you would have the best position to maintain the party's current level of support. How do you react to that poll?
Well, you know, I sure hope that the actual answer is that of all the people who are running, I have the best chance to defeat Danielle Smith. And we certainly got a little bit of work to do left, if you believe that poll. But, you know, that's not the only reason I'm running. Certainly it is something that a lot of party stalwarts, a lot of party members have latched onto. You know, I started this campaign, well, not this campaign, I started my thinking about whether to do this by talking to party members and people who've never voted NDP in every corner of the province. And I was asking a question that I swiftly realized was the wrong question. And the question was, do you want to be ideologically pure or do you want to win? And I probably discovered after one conversation that that was entirely the wrong question. The actual question was, who can help Albertans understand that the values of this party are also their values? Albertans from every corner of the province. And a lot of folks have been saying, you know, because you bring a fresh perspective and clear eyes, but you share our values, you might be the best poised to welcome more people into this house that we've built.
Okay, poised to do so. Do you think you could do better than Rachel Notley? She did come very close to winning again in the last provincial election. Do you think you'll do better?
Well, I hope so. I mean, that has to be the goal. When you're in politics, like it or not, the goal is to be in government, to be able to do the things that you want to do. And it's true. If you took a very simplistic point of view of it and you said, all right, well, you know, it was an interesting campaign, the last one, because in some ways, the UCP did very well in terms of the overall popular vote, but their vote was very concentrated. And so a difference of some 2,000 votes in the right ridings in Calgary would have flipped the election and led to an NDP majority government. Now, if you were going to be very simplistic about it and just overlay a map of where I won three times in Calgary over where the NDP needs to win in Calgary, you'd have an NDP majority government. But of course, it's not that simple. The new leader has to fight to win every single vote. You know, every vote in Edmonton, every vote in Calgary, every vote in the remainder of Alberta. And there are 3 years now until a provincial election. So the new leader needs to be willing to make the commitment to go into every Tim Hortons and A&W and every town in Alberta and talk to people about how the UCP is not actually the conservative parties of the past, that Peter Lougheed, even Ralph Klein would probably be uncomfortable in that party, but that the NDP, despite that name and whatever baggage comes with it, is actually the party that represents the median Alberta voters' values.
Okay, when you say that, I'm wondering what type of reaction you get from lifelong New Democrats. Because, you know, when you talk about this label versus being ideologically really resolved to be a New Democrat, you yourself described yourself as purple, somewhere between Tory blue and Liberal red. What's been the reaction from lifelong New Democrats to you throwing your hat into the race?
What's really been interesting in this first week, I launched exactly a week ago, and the momentum and the excitement has been far beyond my expectations. It was like nothing that I would have thought would have happened. I've been talking to random people on the street in Calgary and Edmonton and in between who just walk up to me and say, thank you for running. Thank you for giving us some optimism about this province. And I know that sounds a bit weird and a bit arrogant to say, but it feels a little bit like the end of my 2010 campaign when we really had tapped into something that people were getting very excited about, a sense of optimism they hadn't felt about the city before, and hopefully something that they're feeling about the province. Now, I will tell you that, you know, you have to have strategy in a campaign like this, and strategy one is to convert the existing members into supporters. Strategy two is to sell new memberships. And, you know, we've blown the lights out on both of those. This morning, I saw an endorsement from someone who did a video endorsement on my website at nenshi.ca who just said, I've been a member for 50 years, and this is exactly what we need. And it was very much a message to the party faithful. I've also been excited that I have four current MLAs who've endorsed me within the and across the ideological spectrum within the existing party, that only one candidate has more MLA endorsements than I do. I've also got a number of former MLAs and candidates who have endorsed me. So I've been very warmly welcomed by the people already within the party, much more so than a lot of my campaign folks would have thought.
Okay, so more than you expected. But in terms of grassroots NDP, as they will be very important in any provincial campaign in terms of a ground game, do you think you have their excitement, their endorsement?
So far, so good. You know, we will have to go through this family discussion with the other candidates, who I must say are terrific. You know, I'm running against five other candidates, one with deep roots in the party through the labor movement, and the other four existing MLAs, all super smart, super capable, amazing women who are running. And I know that the party will come together afterwards. But as I say, I've actually been surprised, particularly by the number of NDP stalwarts in Edmonton, and particularly in rural Alberta, who have come out and said, no, we're very excited about your campaign. Those were probably the most eye-opening moments for me in this past week.
Okay, well, it's just begun, so we're watching closely. But, you know, before you go, Mr. Nenshi, I did also want to get your thoughts on another matter altogether, and this is the debate over the carbon levy. Several premiers, mainly conservative, are calling on Ottawa to drop the April 1st increase to the levy. But as you know, BC's premier, one of only two NDP governments in this country, he says it's all just political baloney. Where do you stand on the issue?
Well, you know, at the end of the day, that increase to the levy, I think, is relatively small. But the federal government has, I think, not managed this particularly well. You have a price on carbon or you don't have a price on carbon. And ultimately, they need to be able to explain to Canadians what the purpose of this is and how it's making a difference on our climate change targets. You know, some of my opponents in this race have talked about, have mused about their thinking about the whether or not Alberta should have a carbon levy. But here's the thing. This is a federal levy. If there is a Liberal government in place at the time of the next Alberta election, we will have to have a price on carbon. And if so, there are three choices. Choice number one is a federal carbon tax. Choice number two is an Alberta carbon tax with the attendant bureaucracy. Choice number three is a cap and trade system that I'd really need to be convinced on. So there'd have to be some sort of carbon price. If we have a conservative government federally by the time of the next Alberta election, there will likely be no carbon levy federally, but the UCP likely will have developed zero climate policy in Alberta. So we'll have to be starting from scratch to really think about what our climate change policy will be. But ultimately, this is a lot of political posturing from people who have no control over the situation, saying what they would like to see. And that's just not really the kind of politics that I practice.
Nenshi, thank you for this. Always appreciate the time. We'll be watching the campaign.
Thank you so much. It's going to be an exciting several weeks.
And that is Primetime Politics for this Monday. For everyone here at CPAC, thank you for watching. I'm Michael Serapio. Primetime Politics will be back tomorrow. But up next, Estée Bégin avec l'essentiel.